KGGFradio.com. If you're not logging on, you're missing out.
It's 17 minutes away from 8 o'clock, 71 degrees at the mighty 690 KGGF. It's a small world. I'm Bill Small, and we're happy to have on the phone with us Kansas Attorney General and Republican GOP gubernatorial hopeful Derek Schmidt. How are you this morning, sir?
Bill, I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me back on.
How are you coping with the heat?
You know, this too shall pass. It's Kansas. We wait a little while, it'll change.
Doctor said the same thing about the gallstone. So, you've been a bunch of busy folks up there in Topeka. Looking at the news, the federal court has blocked President Biden's Title IX changes affecting women's sports. So, you're asking the courts to intervene in that?
Right. So this is one of those issues that when you visit with Kansans about it, most just sort of scratch their heads and say, well, isn't it common sense? The whole point of Title IX was to guarantee equal opportunity for girls and women in sporting competitions by ensuring that they have separate teams, women's basketball, women's volleyball, whatever it may be. That's the whole point. And yet there's this sort of, I don't know if you want to call it a movement, but there's certainly an effort to turn all of that on its head and allow certain biological males, people who are transgender, to compete in women's sports, some of which have gotten a tremendous headline. Finally, the sporting world is starting to push back on that. And at exactly the same time, the Biden administration has hit the accelerator and said full steam ahead. And they've proposed changes to Title IX interpretation that would prohibit states functionally from keeping girls' sports and boys' sports separate. We think that just doesn't make any sense at all. We think the administration is wrong. And so we've gone to court to try to block their new interpretation and leave it to states like Kansas to sort this all out. And so far, the courts have agreed with us. They put the brakes on this. I said that's exactly contrary to the purpose of Title IX and said to the Biden team, you can't do that.
Right. It seems to me that sometimes we go too far in our efforts to be inclusive, that we throw common sense out the window.
You can be both inclusive and respectful and love your neighbor and exercise some common sense. I think that's just sort of a Kansas balance that most people understand intuitively, and that's what everybody's trying to get to here.
We ought to patent that phrase, the Kansas balance. I like that.
I do, too.
And you're working on distributing some of those funds you've recently gotten in the opioid settlements. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we just had the first meeting of this new group of Kansans. A bunch of us get to appoint. I appoint one. The governor appoints one. Senate House leadership, both parties, they appoint members. Leading municipalities, cities and counties, mental health and drug service providers. You get the idea. And these are the folks who now will come together as something that our law calls the Kansas Fights Addiction Grant Review Board. And basically, they will receive requests from cities, counties, private entities, service providers all over the state to receive grants from this money we've recovered from the drug companies because of their mismarketing of opioids and their peddling of addiction for profit. And try to use that money to the best possible end in terms of breaking the cycle of addiction in Kansas. So I'm really grateful to these folks that they're not getting paid for this. They've stepped out of their communities. They've agreed to serve. It's going to be a years-long process as the money comes in. But they are absolutely Kansans at heart who want to see fewer people addicted in this state. So we're on a good path there, but we're just getting started.
How much have we raked in so far? We talked about this the last time you were on. We just got a new settlement. So how much so far? Do you have that number handy?
Yeah, so in Kansas, we have now settled with six of the companies. The total amount that will be coming to the state over time is right at $200 million. It's a very large amount of money. Three-quarters of that has to go to addiction mitigation, so prevention or treatment of some sort. The other quarter goes to cities and counties by a formula that they've agreed to, and they may use it for substance abuse intervention, or they may use it for other purposes. So it's a lot of money, and it reflects the culpability of some of these companies that do a lot of good work. Don't get me wrong, we're glad we have great American innovation in the pharmaceutical sector, but it doesn't change the fact that in this case, you had folks in the marketing departments and their executive suites for many years who put their profits above medical necessity. And the result is we have a lot more people addicted to opioids, to painkillers, right, than we otherwise would have had. They're paying a price for it.
Now, when you pay attention to the news as close as guys like us do, you know, you hear these stories about the government not enforcing the laws that Congress has taken all that time to write. And so, for instance, in immigration laws, and a court has come down and said that the government needs to enforce the laws as they were written. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the court was right on. And as you know, because we talked about this before, in my role as Attorney General for the state, I've always taken the view that our job is to enforce the law the way the people's elected representatives in the legislature wrote it. I don't second-guess their wisdom. I don't second-guess their policy choices. I'm sworn to enforce the law. So, too, should be the approach of the federal executive branch. And so when Congress wrote laws related to immigration that said certain people are supposed to be deported and based upon their conduct or their status, for the Biden administration just to say they disagree with the law and so they're not going to conduct deportations of large categories of folks, including in some cases under their new enforcement priorities, people who have committed crimes in this country, not immigration crimes, other crimes. We just think that's not only a bad idea, it's also illegal. That's not the president's job. If he doesn't like the doesn't like the law, he is welcome to go try to persuade Congress to change it. In fact, he probably should do that. But that doesn't change the fact the law is what the law is today, and that's what the court has said, and we're very pleased with that.
Now, I think you'll agree with me that there's a special extra hot corner in hell for people who would take advantage of senior citizens, children, and the military. You have a consumer corner press release you issued not long ago about this being Military Consumer Protection Month. What should we be looking out for?
Yeah, that's, you know, I don't name all of these months. Every month seems to be named something or another by somebody, but I think this is a one that really is worth some focus. It is National Military Consumer Protection Month. It's so recognized because the folks that gave us that have recognized that military families, particularly those who are on active duty and move around a lot from base to base, from state to state, are sometimes not tethered to the local community particularly closely because they're only in a community for a short time, and most especially those who have one or more family members who are deployed overseas or elsewhere, and so they leave behind the remaining family. They can become particular targets for crooks and con artists. And so on the military consumer protection side, the issues are the same as for everybody else. It's swindlers, it's scam artists, it's telemarketers, it's door-to-door peddlers, it's all of the above. But we want to be particularly mindful of those who target military families. We do that all year round at the AG's office. We do a lot of consumer protection enforcement cooperatively with local authorities in Junction City, Erie County, around Fort Riley, and in Leavenworth, around Fort Leavenworth. We've got a number of enforcement operations there against entities that specifically targeted military families. And this is just the time this month to talk about it a little more than we normally do and remind folks that we need to have the backs of our military families, even when they're home in Kansas.
We're talking to Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt. He's also a hopeful in the GOP primary, which is coming up 2 weeks from today for governor. How are we feeling the 2 weeks out?
Well, I feel very good about the primary. I think you're going to be the Republican nominee for governor this year. I say we. It's going to be myself and then Katie Sawyer, my running mate, will be the nominee for lieutenant governor. And then right after the primary, of course, we'll focus very intently every single day on the race to November in an effort to get a Republican governor elected for our state and get us on track. So I'm looking forward to it. And believe me, Bill, I'm mindful every single day of what a tremendous privilege it is. We're in a tough competition. That's the nature of elections, and I get that. But so few people have the privilege of carrying the banner for what we believe Kansas values is and could be. And I'm going to have that opportunity. So I thank everybody who's let me get this one.
Well, I'm going to put my pitch in now. If you are elected governor, I hope we can continue these monthly conversations here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.
I would like that very much.
All right, my friend, thank you so much, and thanks for sharing all that great information with us. We've got Derek Schmidt. He's your Kansas Attorney General here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.